Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
Hello and welcome to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai. I'm beginning this show in order to continue to spread the word about PTSD service dogs in general, the Americans with Disabilities Act, and just various aspects of service dog life.
How do you deal with the adversity that can occur when somebody objects to the presence of your service dog?
Focus on your dog.
A service dog cannot be a protector. Many handlers don't know what they can't do.
The Service Dog Show with PTS Dog right here on WDVR DV Radio. Hello and welcome to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. My name is Joaquin Watai and I am your host. Tonight we have Bill Austin, a U.S. Army and Air National Guard veteran. Bill is internet famous for an incident that occurred at a restaurant last fall. Where he was unfortunately berated by a woman who was very offended by the presence of Bill and his service dog. Bill, how are you doing this evening?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. So just to get started, tell me a little bit about your career.
Well, in terms of the military, I started out in the Army, and I ended up doing 30 years and 6 months total between the Army and then some of the guard time in the Air National Guard. I was communications in the Army. And then after that, in 94, I switched over and I joined what they call in the Air Guard, a unit that was called a liaison team, which is a really unique animal in that we were the first point where when people needed to be medevaced out through airlift, then the services, whoever we were with, be it the Army, the Navy, the Marines, they would come to us and the patients would be stabilized. And then from there, we would get them into the AirVac system and, of course, then back to more definitive care in that, you know, places like when I was in Afghanistan or Iraq, we would get them stabilized. And then back to a higher echelon of care, which would be, in that particular case, Longstuhl in Germany.
Right, right. Okay, so just briefly, can you share a little bit about the infamous restaurant incident for us?
I'd be glad to. What happened that night was the young lady and her husband, or boyfriend, I believe it was, came into the restaurant. And apparently there was some discontent there, obviously. And we used to live in that area, and we frequented that restaurant. And we were actually there with a group of our family and friends because we went back to the East Coast to visit. And we figured, you know, getting everybody in one point so that we could all be together and enjoy our company rather than, you know, trying to go all over the state of Delaware. Well, anyway, with the owners being very familiar with us and with us working with service dogs and so forth, the one young lady asked my wife if she would not mind explaining to the woman who was upset about service dogs. And my wife approached her and, you know, tried to, you know, said, I understand you have some concerns about the JP, our service dog. And, of course, it just escalated. It became very, you know, very abrasive and a lot of shouting back and forth and so forth. So it wasn't a very good situation. Personally, for me, I had JP with me. And I was more concerned because of how agitated this woman was that it was going to get physical. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I didn't want anybody to go to jail. I definitely didn't want anybody to get hurt, including the lady. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where nothing good could come out of that, you know, when you get into physical altercation. So I did try to calm things down, but of course it didn't work too well. And the police were called. And as it would happen, the one responding officer who came to the scene was actually a canine handler and was very aware of the ADA guidelines and so forth. And so after that, of course, you know, the rest is history. It was video. Somebody had an iPhone and they were videotaping the whole thing. And it went viral. I mean, it went clean overseas to the United Kingdom, to Australia, to even Poland. A friend of ours, her daughter, is a stewardess, and she was in Warsaw at the time and saw it in Warsaw.
Wow.
So, you know, that's media.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to bring it up because I thought that your response was absolutely masterful. You were very calm. Your service dog, JP, who is a Great Dane, was very focused, yes, quiet. In fact, JP looked almost relaxed during that whole incident. So that brings up the question, when you are faced with issues like this, do you think and plan ahead? Do you have a plan in your mind? How do you deal with the adversity that can occur when somebody objects to the presence of your service dog?
Well, first and foremost, I think what I really try to keep in mind is this. The general public's perception of people with PTSD is that we're crazy and, you know, we're gun killers and all this and so forth. And, you know, truth be told, anybody who doesn't or hasn't been diagnosed with a diagnosis of PTSD, when you're angry, when something, you know, makes you angry, you're going to become vocal. You may yell, you may scream, you know, worst case scenario is, yeah, you get physical with somebody. But if somebody knows that you have PTSD and you get angry and you start becoming really loud and vocal, then all of a sudden they're crazy. And that's so far from the truth, because with PTSD, violence is not one of the symptoms or one of the characteristics of that diagnosis. So that's something that I think about, you know, to try to keep calm so that I don't present that negative impact, because JP's vest has on it PTSD service dog. And I mean, I've been out in public and had people come up to me and they see, you know, because the big dog, Jay's big, you know, and they see the PTSD and their eyes get wide and they give me a wide berth, you know, and it's just like, you know, it's kind of sad. The other part of that equation is, with a service dog, and trying to help educate people about service dogs and the rules and regulations, because there's so much misconception about it and so forth. I consider myself as an ambassador. So by trying to remain calm, by trying to talk to people, and most importantly, to have respect for people, no matter what happens, just remember, you know what? Try to have respect for them, treat them with respect. Then hopefully they'll remember that and they'll understand, or later on they'll think about what I've said and they'll see that, you know what? Yeah, this is the way a service dog is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. So I kind of deal with it on those two levels.
Mm-hmm. I think that's absolutely brilliant. And you're right about the stigma, unfortunately, that PTSD carries. There's, all the way back to the movie Rambo, and stories of shell shock from World War I and World War II. People have this big misconception and don't understand that really the PTSD sufferer is not, in general, prone to go violent until you provoke them to the point where they're done. You know, our fight or flight response center is on all the time. We're always on edge. And I know for me, with Skeeter, my service dog, having him there to alert me that I'm starting to, that my levels are going up, that I'm starting to stress, that I'm starting to lose control, he responds to that. He lets me know, hey, Dad, pay attention. Think about what's going on, you know. One of his tasks is to sit on my foot when I start escalating. And when... When a 100-pound dog sits on your foot, you have one response. You drop your hand and start petting it. That starts calming you yes. down. It releases oxytocin, reduces the dopamine levels. You know, it makes a change. It makes a physiological change in the body that helps to calm you and keep you from getting to that next point. So again, I would just like to say, I thought that your handling of the situation was absolutely masterful. And thank you so much for setting such a fine example. The comment I made when I saw the video was, wow, that veteran is really, really keeping his cool. That is wonderful. And it brought to mind a quote from another service dog handler named Lon Hodge, who, quoting a third party, "You don't look like you have a service dog." And his response was, "That's because I have a service dog."
Yeah. So, good response.
Yeah, exactly. Tell me a little bit about JP and your journey.
Very good. Yeah. Well, I was on my sixth tour overseas. I was doing medevacs. So anyway, when I came home from the last time, needless to say, I was broken. I really was. And so I really wanted to train JP to be a service dog for somebody else. And the lady that gave JP to me to train ended up having a conversation or a meeting with the Wounded Warriors out of Washington, D.C. And so anyway, they said something to the effect that you have a warrior, a wounded warrior, who's training a service dog to be a dog for somebody else in their needs. And she said, yeah. And they said, well, how about if he keeps the dog and we'll let him go around to other vets and help them train their dogs? Well, during that course of time while we were working together, JP and I bonded. And the lady told me, you know, because of what was going on with her business deal with Wounded Warriors and so forth, I kept JP for myself. Unfortunately, the thing with Wounded Warriors fell through, so I didn't go that way. But the woman who gave me JP, I still worked with him and so forth. With, you know, the basic sit, stay, this kind of thing. And then after that, when she said I should keep him, then I started training him, for my needs. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I have a problem with is, short-term memory. So JP has been trained to help me take my medication every day. Mm-hmm. He comes and gets me at a certain time and, we go. And I make sure that I get my medicine. And how we did that, one of the tricks to the trade is, my wife went to the pharmacy and got a medicine cap that has an alarm in it. Mm. And so for the first 2 weeks, when that alarm would go off, my wife would come and get me and bring JP, and we had what we call high-end treats by the bottle. In that respect, it was hot dogs, mm-hmm. pieces of hot dog. So she would make sure that I took my medication. I would, and then make sure that I gave him a treat. So now when he hears that alarm, he comes and gets me because he associates that. So that's one of the tricks to the trade.
That's fantastic. That's actually a task I should start working on with my next service dog. Thanks for the tip there.
Absolutely.
So you touched on something, and it's a point of discussion I have with a lot of people. While you were training JP initially for a third party, the bonding that is absolutely necessary, in my opinion, for a PTSD service dog team to be successful happened between you, the trainer, and JP, which then gives a third party a dog who, although is, I'm sure, going to be obedient, and the bond can eventually occur, but it hands over a dog to that third party who's not bonded to them, is not responding to their needs because it hasn't seen their needs. I'm a real big proponent of what I like to call cooperative training, where the veteran and his service dog work with the trainer, but the dog is in the veteran's care 24/7.
I agree. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you get started training service dogs? Let's go back a step there.
It was through my wife, because when I came home, tried to do and learn everything she could about PTSD, the cause, effect, and so forth. And she's been my biggest advocate, best supporter. She's my pit bull, you know. But in regards, what happened was the lady who was I got JP from, she taught me different things to do to bond with JP. Mm-hmm. And this is where, and she showed me how to train JP for my needs. And this is why I agree with what you said, because, you know, if a trainer gets, and I'm not against somebody else training the dog, you know, I mean, there's pros and cons to everything. Mm-hmm. But my experience is that when you show somebody how to train their dog and their dog is with them all the time, you get a much better bond. You absolutely do. I've seen it too many times, you know, to know that that's a true statement. And, so everything we do, when you were talking about when your dog sits on your foot, you pet it. We go through things. And of course, I only do what I was taught. And I teach them the same way because it was effective. So I tell them every day, when you're in a good mood, when everything's fine, I want you to take the time to lay the dog on its side, lay down alongside the dog, put your body against its back, and do slow strokes on the dog. And that is one of the biggest ways for the dog to really bond with you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's incredible. And then and there's been times where I was training with somebody and they started getting amped up. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, focus on your dog, pet your dog, pet your dog, focus on your dog. And what this does is it also teaches the dog how to recognize the person's getting amped up and the dog needs their attention. And it's such an incredible thing to see, because when the person was getting amped up, you would see these real rapid, agitated strokes on the dog's coat. And then after a while, you see those strokes starting, you know, to go slow. Mm-hmm. It's just awesome. I mean, it's so much better than any medication they could ever give, you know. And and the same thing, like we teach them, like sometimes people with PTSD have hallucinations. Mm-hmm. And we tell them, you know, or I'll tell them, focus on your dog. Because usually when you're with your dog, if somebody that it's not familiar with comes up, they'll get a little bit agitated, or they may pull closer to the person, or, you know, there'll be some type of body language to indicate that, you know, somebody's close.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we tell them, so if you see this happening, your dog's not getting anxious, it's not all over the place, then more than likely it could be a hallucination, and try to work through it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we covered, you know, a little bit about your military experience and how you got started with JP. Let's go back and talk a little bit about access. It's been pretty much at the public's forefront recently with the Delta Airlines changing their access policy for emotional support animals, and, you know, it's the hot button issue right now, and everybody, well, make more laws. I am a firm believer that more regulation is not going to solve the issue of untrained animals in public. What's your take on that?
I tend to agree with that. And the reason why I say I tend to agree with that is because there's, number one, according to federal guidelines, ADA, someone who tries to pass their dog as a service dog, and it is not, it's already a federal offense. It's a crime punishable by a fine and or imprisonment. And as you're saying, all these laws, these different laws that everybody tries to make for every scenario known to man, enforcing them is the key.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Now, I do believe that because under the ADA guidelines, there's no such thing as a certified service dog, I believe that we need to establish some type of a database. And where people that have service dogs, they can, send this information to the database. That way, for these businesses and owners of businesses that are being taken advantage of, people trying to pass their service dogs, they can call the number and get verification, yay or nay, that, you know what, this is a service dog or it isn't a service dog. And if you don't mind me piggybacking on your comment about Delta Airlines and so forth, because people with the same emotional support animals, there's been a lot of incidences that have occurred between dogs acting aggressively, biting the steward or stewardess, if you will, the flight attendants, and other such things. And again, after a while, a situation can only go on for so long, and then something has to be done, especially if it's negative like that, And more importantly, when you consider the environment, 30,000 feet or whatever the case may be, where with these aircraft fly, there's no room for that type of a situation. I mean, we had a friend back in Delaware. She's a flight attendant, and she told me about a friend of hers who was on an aircraft, and the handler had emotional support dog, went to the restroom, left the dog in the seat untethered. Mm-hmm. Now, according to ADA guidelines, the dog, a service dog, even emotional support, is supposed to be in control of the handler all the time. Mm-hmm. So the stewardess, the flight attendant, went walking by, and for whatever reason, the dog bit her.
Wow.
And that's wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, we do, for our listeners' sake, we need to make very clear the ADA covers access to Title II and Title III facilities. That is, places of public accommodation like grocery stores, restaurants, movie theaters, things like that, and public buildings. Air travel is covered by the Air Carriers Access Act. And the Air Carriers Access Act, for whatever reasons, the writers lumped service dogs and emotional support animals together for the purposes of air travel. So there is a distinct difference between the ADA and the ACAA. And the ADA is not applied the same way according to the ACAA when you get into that aircraft at 30,000 feet. So I just want to make sure we get that clarity out there. I have to touch on what you said about the registry or a central database.
Yes.
It's a good idea, and at the same time, I have issues with it. I'm not really for more legislation or oversight, primarily because it could very easily become a level of discrimination. And the other thought is, who's going to fit the bill? Who's going to foot the bill? As it is, it's very difficult to, unless you're a veteran, to get a service dog. It's very difficult, if whether you're a veteran or a civilian, to train a service dog. It's a lot of work. It can become very, very expensive if you're purchasing a program-trained dog. And then you have to go into some kind of registry or registration. Where's that cost going to come from? Who's going to run the registry? Who's going to fund the people that maintain the database, answer the phones? It gets very, very complicated. And honestly, my personal opinion is that without education, without doing things like making a radio show, talking about service dog issues, without writing books, without, sharing factual information about service dogs as much as we can, we're not gonna make headway. I think that the businesses need to be educated about their rights under the ADA. I think
absolutely
the public needs to be educated about their rights under the ADA. And I think that both sides need to understand that the people who are covered by this law are disabled. So when somebody comes into a store with their ESA, which, by the way, is also only protected by the FHA and ACAA for disabled people, if they're not disabled right away, they're already presuming disability for the sake of taking their pet where they want to. And that's pretty unethical, you know?
Yeah. You know, I absolutely appreciate what you're saying about is it the basic cure-all and, of course, the logistics of it all. You're absolutely right. And I mean, again, there's pros and cons to it. And like you're saying, who flips the bill? Because this information has to be stored. People have to be put into position. What agency, government, state, or, you know, federal or state, who would be mandated to, you know, number one, keep the records, update the records, the whole nine yards. And you're absolutely right. You know, I mean, it's not a cure all. But again, with the way people have been trying to, you know, buck the system, as I say, something has to be done. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, people like you and I or people that have service dogs, you know, we do what we're supposed to do and maybe take a few extra steps to ensure that, you know what, if we're ever questioned about if our service dog is a real service dog or not, we're willing to do what it takes to say, hey, you know what, I'm empathetic towards your situation. Yes, this is my service dog. Here's what I have for you. Mm-hmm. The people that, you know, the people out there, the ones that want to try to buck the system, they're going to be the ones that are, you know, they're the ones that are causing most of the problems with this specific topic in action.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You are listening to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog right here on DV Radio WDVR. We'll be right back after this short break.
Let's get it on.
We got some food made for you.
The music.
Let's go.
You're listening to WDVR on DVRadio.net. By veterans, for veterans.
Simply made for you.
Hey, listen up. This is the most important 30 seconds of your day. More than 50,000 veterans are homeless right now. Brave men and women who served our country are sleeping on the streets. Luckily, there's one New England organization who is giving these vets a second chance. Welcome to the DV Farm, operated by vets for vets. The DV Farm in southwestern New Hampshire provides housing for homeless veterans and the rehab and support they need to reintegrate back into civilian life. Learn more and find out how you can support the DV Farm at dvfarm.org. That's dvfarm.org.
And welcome back. You're listening to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I'm Joaquin Watai, your host, and we are right here on DV Radio, WDVR, with Bill Austin. Bill, welcome back. I'd like to talk a little bit about what you're doing now. You've got JP, you're working with JP. How long have you had JP, by the way?
Since he was 3 months old.
Oh, wow. How many years is that now?
Well, he'll be 7 the 15th of this month, February.
Oh, okay. Skeeter just turned 7 last month.
Nice.
Yeah. So you've had a good long time working with your teammate. But tell me a little bit about what you're doing now, how you're reaching out to veterans. What is your – you have a mission.
Yes, exactly. And what I do is I'm trying to give back what was given to me, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, when I started training JP when he was 3 months old, I had been home for 2 years before I had gotten JP. And one day my wife said to me, "Don't you get it?" I'm like, "Get what?" She goes, "This is the first time in 2 years that you've smiled and laughed."
Wow.
And I said, "Because he brings me peace." You know? And so anyway, the lady that who gave me JP, her philosophy was, and she was a retired Marine, and she even may still be there in North Carolina somewhere. I don't know where, but, you know, but anyway. So she taught me everything for free. She gave me JP for free because she said we already paid the price. And so this is what I do. I help people find a dog, and then I show them how to train their dog to be a service dog, and I do it for free. Because that's what was done for me. I mean, I'm only showing them how to do it. I'm not actually training them.
Right.
That's my philosophy. It's the veteran who's training the dog. So, you know, and I mean, one of the things that, you know, we did when I was in Delaware, we actually went as far as having a client in Arkansas who asked for our help. And so I said, okay, well, this is what we'll do. If you can have somebody videotape your sessions with your pup and then email them to me, then what I'll do is, you know, I'll review them, look at them, and, you know, we'll go from there and, you know, we'll make corrections along the way. So that's what I do. I've been helping people, our vets coming back with traumatic brain injury and PTSD. And, of course, we try to find a little bit about them and about what their needs are. One of the things we do look for is we ask them if they have any anger issues, and that's a big thing, because we want to help the veteran, but in the same token, we don't want to put a dog in a situation where it's going to be abused.
Absolutely.
That's not good.
Absolutely. And that's something that's an important point whenever you're working with veterans. Or anybody, but specifically PTSD sufferers and training service dogs, is not everybody is at a point in their life where they're ready for a service dog. They may get to a point where they're ready, but it's certainly not a magic cure. It's a part of your treatment. The other things that we do for treatment are helpful. Some medications are helpful. Let me ask you a question. Me personally, I was on the zombie cocktail for a couple of years. The VA had me very well sedated most of the time. I was able to stop taking all of those drugs and start being more functional once I started using Skeeter. Do you have a similar experience?
My first experience with the VA was the very first day I walked in the door. And the individual there goes, "How are you, pal? How are you really feeling? Come on, let's go up and see the doc. We'll get you some drugs." And I'm like, "I don't want drugs." And he's like, "Why?" And I said, "Because I was in the medical field. And I know that that's a band-aid." And the problem with medications is that after a while, you either have to take a larger dose to get the same therapeutic effect, or you got to go to something bigger and stronger. And I'm not against meds. I mean, because they have their purpose. They really do. Sometimes you need them. But just to automatically start putting people on drugs, civilian-wise or otherwise, it's a band-aid. It's not helping the problem. It's just helping alleviate some of the, you know, the symptoms caused by the from the illness itself.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, you know, everybody is individual. They've got to do what they have to do to get by. You know, and if that's what it takes for a while, then that's what it takes. And there's no harm in that. But with the dog, you know, like with JP, the things that I was taught in terms of, cognitive, helping me with cognitive issues, it was nothing more than, using, office, WordPro or Office, just creating a document. I don't care what you name it, but you put in there the different things that happened when you were training with your dog, and then trying to add more and more detail to stimulate that cognitive effect to help your memory get a little bit better and start remembering things. And I mean, you know, like with a service dog, most of the guys that come back, or when we come back from overseas assignments, basically what we want to be is left alone.
Yeah.
We're just trying to make normalcy of all the horrors and the helter-skelter of what we experienced, you know. The bad side to that is most of the time the guys stay locked up in their house or their room. So with a dog, you've got to take them out and walk them. You've got to feed them. You've got to, you know, you have to do these different things. And this is a very slow process to start re-socializing that veteran so that they can at least try to function again as a normal human being. I mean, a lot of them feel bad enough as it is for what they've been through, what they've maybe had to do, the whole nine yards. Mm-hmm. But they're not monsters. They deserve to live. They were in a situation that required them to respond, behave, do whatever they had to do when they did it. But they're not bad. They're not mean. And they have every right to be happy and live a life and find that sense of normalcy and purpose again. And I strongly believe that service dogs do that.
I agree 100%. A friend of mine, are you familiar with the Stick Vet comics?
No, I'm sorry, I'm not.
Oh, well, the author, he's a really great guy, and he was in the mental health field in the Army and then in mental health for a while afterwards. And he says the service dog is the only treatment for PTSD that treats the veteran, not his symptoms. And I couldn't agree more. You have to change your whole life, right down to the way you speak to other people, because you can't yell at dogs and snap at dogs. They don't respond to that. You know, you start yelling and the dog thinks you're barking. Hey, oh, we're barking now, you know. You have to talk to the dog. You have to find, you know, you have to learn to communicate in a completely different way when you're training your dog, when you're training with your dog. I've always said that the cooperative approach doesn't necessarily train the dog much at all. It teaches the veteran. And,
yes.
And that process is a huge healing process for the PTSD sufferer. It because you have to completely change your life. You have to relearn how to live and make that connection. I got to tell you, a dog is striking this JP, and because this is radio, I'm going to describe him. JP is it dappled, you would call him?
He's a blue merle.
A blue merle Great Dane. He is absolutely stunning. He's majestic and calm. He's such a calm dog. All the pictures I see of him, he's just calm and beautiful. And my service dog Skeeter is an Alaskan Malamute. Same thing, majestic, just stunning visually. And when you handle a dog like that, you discover really quickly you have to be able to talk to people. And what I learned, how, you know, Skeeter helped me, training and handling Skeeter cured my social isolation. What I learned is I might not be able to talk about the weather with you, but I will talk about my dog all day long. Absolutely. You know, if you want to learn about Malamutes, let me tell you about Malamutes.
You know, it's so true, because I'm approached so much in public because, you know, people see the dog. I'll tell you, I digress for a second. When you were talking about the incident back in Delaware,
yes.
When we were on our way back home across the United States, we were in the state of South Dakota, mm-hmm. and some lady recognized JP, and she goes, "Were you the guy in that video that's going viral?" I said, "Yes, ma'am, I was." She recognized JP.
Well, that's exactly how I found you. I saw the post that we won't discuss that post, but I saw a post that your wife had made, and I clicked to check out your page because I was confused whether it had been your service dog or not, and figured out that it was not, and saw JP and was like, "Hey, that's the dog."
Yeah.
You know, "Oh, that's the dog." And so I contacted you, but he's striking. He's absolutely a stunning example of the breed. What an absolute delight to have have him and have had him since he was a baby. That's fantastic. Let's talk about something, and it's a difficult subject, but it's one I'm dealing with myself. Skeeter just turned 7 last month. JP's about to turn 7. How are you planning to deal with the fact that JP's going to need a successor?
Oh, I don't. I go back and forth with it. Mm-hmm. Oh, you touched a very emotional.
I apologize. It's just as emotional for me.
No, no.
I mean, but they do age, and especially large breeds, they have a shorter lifespan.
Yeah, and I can touch on that in a second. Mm-hmm. But I go back and forth with it. The thing with service dogs is they're trained to such a high standard, for lack of a better way of putting it. They're not allowed to make mistakes. They have to be perfect all the time. And so with that being said, talking about servitude, mm-hmm. and unfortunately with them, you know, a person that goes to work every day, they come home, they take their clothes off, and, you know, the day is over. It's done. Mm-hmm. When I was training JP, I trained JP with his work vest on. So when I put that vest on, he knew that it's work. Mm-hmm. Now we got to work. And then, you know, of course, every opportunity I would take it off if he was in the car, if we were done training, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, dogs can't do that. They don't turn it off and on.
Right.
You know, and of course, they get burned out. And even JP is at that stage where he's starting to get burned out, because when he was younger, even 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I'd say, come on, let's go. You ready to go? Boom. He was out the door. He's ready to go. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, come on, bud, let's go. We got to go. And he's lagging and dragging. He's on the porch. He's sitting up and watching as I pull my vehicle out the whole 9 yards. Mm-hmm. And I feel for him because it is such a difficult and stressful situation for him. Because when I'm not around and he can't see me, he gets stressed out because we're always together. Yep. But then when I take him, the same thing, it gets stressful for him. Mm-hmm. And I love him with my heart.
Absolutely.
And he's given me more than I could ever give him, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's why every day I never take one day for granted. Yeah. Every day, sometimes 4 or 5 times a day, I'm petting him, I'm loving on him, I tell him I love him, you know? Just incredible.
You know, I equivalent, the service dog, the PTSD service dog, to a prosthetic. It is a prosthetic for mental processes that are stripped from us due to PTSD. And that we train that dog to replace those gaps in our brains.
That's a good point.
And I think are just as vital for the PTSD sufferer as the amputee. That prosthetic leg connects your foot, your knee to the ground, where your leg used to be. Well, in the same way that PTSD service dog connects your perceptions to a reality filtering system that PTSD bypasses and keeps you locked on fight or flight. That dog becomes the reassurance that, no, you don't have to panic. No, you don't have to, you know, fight cover. It's okay. As long as I'm telling you it's okay, trust that it's okay. One of the first things I tell somebody who's just new with working with and training their dog is that the most important thing they have to do is learn to trust their dog.
Absolutely.
Now, for me, it was I had an epiphany moment. I actually had a panic attack in a store. Skeeter, being a 100-pound Malamute, turned around, reared up, put his paws on my shoulders, knocked me flat on my back, and laid on me and did deep pressure therapy until I was calm enough to leave. What was your epiphany moment when you said, I can trust him?
Wow, there's a...
The dog that tried to attack him.
When we were in a Walmart, mm-hmm. and this a woman had this big white dog, Great Pyrenees, mm-hmm. specifically was the breed, mm-hmm. and this dog charged at me, and JP alerted on him. and growled a little bit, and I'm like, you know, and I started moving out of the way, break contact, because I didn't want them to get into it. I didn't want him being hurt.
Right.
But, you know, at the same time, it was just like, you know, he definitely had my back in that situation. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's been a couple other times where, you know, five, six years ago, probably when I first came home in 2009, probably to about 2012, mm-hmm. was a very hard, difficult time for me, a very dark time. Mm-hmm. And he really helped me out through that. I was broken. As I said, if that confrontation had occurred in the restaurant 4 or 5 years ago, mm-hmm. or, you know, back in that time frame that I just mentioned, mm-hmm. it may have escalated pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm glad, you know, I'm glad it didn't take effect, or that it didn't happen then. Excuse me.
Right.
But because, I mean, that would have not been good again. That's not good at all.
Yeah.
But he's had my back several times, and a really neat story I'll tell you about one of my clients who was a sniper. Mm-hmm. And I was working with him, and of course, you know, sleep's a big issue with us. You know, I'm sorry, I hope you don't get offended, but it sucks. Sleep's just, you know.
I had a rough night last night myself, brother. I understand.
Yeah. And so what ended up happening was I was having this conversation with this guy, and I said, after working with him for about three or four months, I said, so how's it gone? You sleeping? He goes, yeah. Because his dog was laying next to him, mm-hmm. and he knew that dog had his back.
Literally.
You know? Oh, yeah. I mean, it was just that tight of a bond. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, this guy really worked diligently with his dog, and they had an incredible bond, you know. Yeah, they have, exactly. Yeah. They have an incredible bond together. Yeah. So it's good stuff.
There's a lot of misconception about service dog training out there, and especially a lot of misconception about owner training. However, here you are, you're an owner trainer, you worked with the trainer, learn to train your dog, and you're then turning that around and doing the same. One of the biggest things is, oh, well, I can just go out and buy a service dog and I'll be good to go. And I really strongly feel that that's, although you're right, there is a place for those kind of dogs, for programmed dogs. In my experience, handling a service dog is progressive. It's always evolving, and every time you go out is a training opportunity.
I think
the ADA writers were absolutely brilliant in not requiring certification, because how do you certify something that is constantly progressing? Dogs age. Dogs change as they age. Their experiences shape them the same way people's experiences shape them. So to the new service dog, to the person who's investigating a service dog as part of their treatment plan, in your words, how do you describe what it entails? How do you describe the complexity of making that decision?
Well, you know, you actually hit on it spot on, to be perfectly honest. I'll just say it in a different manner. I tell people when they ask me how long was the training? Training is ongoing. Mm-hmm. And the reason why training is ongoing is because we as people at our age, whatever age that is we're at, we have experienced a lot of things in life, and we know how we're going to respond to those. But there's a lot of things that we haven't been or haven't experienced, and we don't know how we're going to respond to those until we get involved in that situation. And so this is what I tell them. Another thing is, you know, some people, when I'm helping them train their dog to be a service dog, I tell them, because some people have, if you say you got to take a test or something like that, they get really amped up about that. That's a stressor. Mm-hmm. I'm not about pass and fail. Mm-hmm. When I help train, my philosophy is we're taking good behavior and making it better, And we're taking bad behavior and we're making it better. Mm-hmm. And as you said, every opportunity, positive or negative, is a wonderful training situation. It absolutely is.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. Well, Bill, I think we're about done for the show. Do you have anything you'd like to add?
I absolutely do. In terms of education, first of all, if you're thinking you need a service dog, please try to do it the right way. See your doctor, get a note, go from there. In terms of getting a dog, try to get a dog that fits your physical needs. If you need a service dog for mobility, you want to go with a bigger dog, something that will meet your physical characteristics. I mean, you know, you don't need a Chihuahua. Unfortunately, there's nothing against them, but a Chihuahua would not be physically be able to help you with mobility issues. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, think about something larger. Number two, go to a reputable breeder, because then you're going to get the background of the dog, the mom, the father, the health, the demeanor of the dog and so forth. This is very important. Some people will say that's expensive to do. And there's a number of ways of around that. Number one, ask the individual, the breeder, if they're willing to donate the dog to you to become a service dog and write it off as a tax deduction. If not, then ask them, would you be willing if I paid half the amount and you write off the other half as a tax deduction? Maybe that will work. And so that may help the individual. I don't have anything about going against rescue dogs and so forth per se. But again, you're dealing with a situation that you don't know where that dog came from. Was it abused? Does it have aggression issues and so forth? And these are important things. The other part is read the ADA guidelines and understand that there is a big difference between service dog, emotional support dog, and, therapy dog. They're different titles, and they have different things that they're allowed to do and not do.
I absolutely agree 100%. All right, you've been listening to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I am Joaquin Watai. We have been with our wonderful guest, Bill Austin. Bill, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to join me.
Thank you for having me. I mean, seriously, it's been very nice. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. You've been listening to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog right here on WDVR DV Radio.